Today's podcast is brought to you by Be Dratty, our friends over at Be Dratty. It's cold. Will Knights is here. Will, what's your favorite Be Dratty item you got?
I mean, how can you go wrong with a crew neck sweater? It's the best thing that they've got in the shop.
The sweatshirt? You like the sweatshirt?
Oh, yeah. Front pocket. I mean, you're lounging around watching coffee go off in the morning. You got Hawaii coming up. You're going to be sitting around. You need something comfy, something warm, looking out at the snow. It's good for all situations.
Yeah, people a lot of times look at me. I'm wearing that sweater. They're like, is that a kangaroo pouch on a crew neck sweatshirt? And I'm like, oh, yeah. And it's like people get like jealous if you've got a kangaroo pouch and they don't have one.
Well, I mean, especially you got Violet here. She's running around. You could throw her right in there, carry around the golf course.
Who knows? You know, the kangaroo pocket has no limits as to where it'll go. There's snow on the ground here, so I don't think I'm going to be going to the golf course anytime soon. You can get the crew neck on our website, thefriedegg.com. We've got a few and some random sizes left. But otherwise, you can go get that sweatshirt on bedratty.com. Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today, I am joined by Nick Hardy. Nick is a former All-American from the University of Illinois. He was actually up on the podcast a couple years ago. I think it's episode 19 or thereabouts. He was on with his teammate, Dylan Meyer. So Nick is just got through the second stage of Q school. He's obviously a pretty high-profile young player who will be playing on the Corn Ferry Tour next year and a local from the Chicago area. So I've gotten to watch Nick play so many times growing up from when he was 13. It's been pretty cool to see a local kid really develop into one of the best young players in the game. So here's our podcast with Nick Hardy.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie. I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
What do you do in your downtime when you're not playing golf?
Oh man, I mean, not much, honestly. I like to work out. You know, I just like to chill. Quite honestly, I like to chill because I spend a lot of time, you know, at golf and just because I love it, I'm always practicing, I'm always playing. But you know, I like to work out and I like to chill. I love fantasy football. I love the Bears. You know, I mean, I love
tough season.
I set aside all my Sunday afternoons to watch football, but besides that, I mean, you know, I'm pretty, you know, bland besides that.
Going from college to professional golf, where college you have a lot of built-in distractions mm-hmm. to golf, you know, professional golf, you golf all the time. What's been the toughest thing about that? Have you had troubles?
Right. No, there's no doubt. I mean, my senior year of college, I remember thinking like, okay, I'm going to be making this transition next year and I'm going to have a lot more downtime than I do right now, you know, just based on having, you know, teammates at hand and being able to, you know, be competitive with them day to day, practice schedule, workout schedule. Everything's planned for you from class to studying, you know, everything's, you have your own plan, everything out for you. And, you know, the next year I would have to really just make my own plan and be cautious that I'm not trying to overdo it too, because knowing me, I'll probably want to overdo working on the game and just being there too much. But it's important to build, you know, outside hobbies and have a routine day to day that you're comfortable with. You're making sure you're not kind of overdoing it. And I think I found the happy medium. I mean, It's been nice because I just really have slowed myself down on a day-to-day basis. College, you're kind of running from class to practice to lunch to, you know, you name it, you got something to do. And now I just kind of take my time. I notice that I'm moving a lot slower day-to-day, which is better for me. I notice I drive slower. I eat slower. I do everything a lot slower than I did in college. And I think that's honestly a much better way to live. But I think that's really what I've noticed.
Did it take time to figure out that you needed to slow down?
No, I guess it just sort of happened. You know, it just went flowed that way because I just had more time and I was able to fill gaps by just eating breakfast slowly every morning or taking more time practicing over, you know, still being, you know, effective with practice, but having more time to do what I feel like I need to do.
You go down to Scottsdale in the winter. Do you stay with other guys playing, or do you have roommates, or do you?
Yeah, I stay with family friends. Actually, my caddy Eric Marcus, his parents live out there, and they have a house in the DC Ranch community. So I stayed with them last winter, and I plan on doing so a little bit this winter too. But I also have my grandpa in Tucson, who I stay with for a couple times, and then my buddy's Charlie Danielson's out there. So I will stay with him a couple times too. But yeah, having family friends out there for now is great for me because it's, you know, I like to be in Chicago and when it's nice. And so it's doesn't really make sense. Hopefully I'm on the road in the wintertime when I want to be in Scottsdale. It doesn't really make sense for me to have my own place yet out there.
Yeah. Hopefully you're on the road all the time.
Yes. Hopefully I'm on the road all the time. But
you want to be doing the Asia swing. And
that's true.
This time of year.
That's true.
So you talked to, when we talked last time, when you were still in school, you were a junior then at Illinois, you talked about how you work really well with structure. Mm-hmm. How have you gone about building structure now that you get to decide your structure?
Right. It's nice, you know, when I was in college, especially having Coach Small develop our own structure in terms of practice, that was really nice. And having, you know, six or seven other guys being able to compete against every single day was really nice. And now I start to realize how lucky I was to have that just fit out and plan for me because, you know, obviously I trusted Coach Small first and foremost with my practice, but with structure in my whole life because he really cared about us. And I knew I was doing the right things. And I believed 100% that I was doing the right things in practice that would make myself successful on the course. And now that, you know, I've spent 4 years at school and learning from Coach and learning from my teammates, I kind of know how to practice to get things done and not just be there and just going through the motions. So I try to do things that we did at school in my structured practice and try to complete things in practice and try to feel like I'm getting things done in order to get that confidence, that self-belief, instead of just kind of being there, hitting balls, going through the motions and whatnot. So having learned from Coach Small and being structured in practice at school, I've been able to do things on my own, but not having those teammates from day to day is the biggest difference.
Yeah. Talk about the teammates. I think one of the interesting things with college golf is that it's this team environment. And I mean, your guys' teams at Illinois, great players. I mean, Charlie Danielson, who we were talking about earlier, Thomas Dietrich, Brian Campbell, Dylan Meyer, you know, guys that are playing on PGA Tour, European Tour, having a lot of success. Mm-hmm. What was the practice environment like?
Right. Yeah, no. Coach made the practice environment extremely competitive. Like every single day we were doing something to get our competitive juices flowing, you know, like that. And that's a great thing about our team, though. Those guys you named, every single one of them was super, super competitive, and everyone hated losing in practice as much as they did in, you know, on the course and in real competition. So that having that every day was such a good environment. And, you know, now it's for me, I have different guys that I do that with, but having those guys those types of players at your disposal every day, whether it be on the course or in the indoor facility or outdoor facility, we're doing something to keep competitive.
So you've kind of like, as you've moved into professional golf, you've got a group of guys now that you have
right.
similar competitiveness with when you're practicing and when you're playing.
Yeah. So at the Merritt Club where I practice, you know, and I've been, you know, lucky to practice for 8 years now, I practice with Patrick Flavin a bunch, Brian Orr, my old high school teammate. They're both, you know, up and coming players who've just turned pro recently, and Patrick's had success this year on the Latin America Tour. So, I mean, we make each other better. We feed off each other for sure. There's no doubt that over the years we've made each other better. And we're not probably doing similar things, you know, that we were doing at school with Coach Small in terms of practicing competitively, but we're on the golf course just as competitive. We could play for a dollar and it'd be, it'd be quiet out there sometimes. We'd not be talking to each other, just really competitive on the golf course. We don't want to lose to each other. So that's what makes you better, though.
What's your guys' favorite games to play on the course?
If we got a foursome, we're always playing Scotch games, just two on two. I'm sure many people are familiar with Scotch games, but we would mix up the teams randomly. We always play with Jim Billiter too. They have pro at Kemper Lakes, and it's great playing at Kemper Lakes too, because that course is very hard. It can beat you up, especially the back nine.
Those last few holes.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it playing that course too has made me better. So it's quite a treat to be able to play there too.
Last year, you missed out on getting through Q School Stage 2 just by, what was it, two shots. And then you didn't go to play either Canada or Latin America. You kind of did a lot of Mondays, some smaller events in Arizona. You got some exemptions. What was the decision? Did you think about doing Latin America or Canada? Or was there a reason that you didn't do it?
Yeah, of course I did. I mean, it was a very tough decision, and I don't regret anything of what I did the past year. And looking back on it, I mean, the year couldn't have gone better. I failed so many times. I mean, I three putted the last two holes at Q School, second stage last year, to miss by two. I missed the cut by one at Torrey Pines in the sponsor exemption I had. I missed the cut by one at Dominican Republic. I lost in a 4-for-3 playoff to get in the waste management. I missed the cut by one at the U.S. Open. I mean, just making the cut is not my standard I set for myself. But in order to have any success that you want to have, you got to play the weekend. And I couldn't be more thankful for those experiences now. I mean, I've learned so much from those experiences, and I'll never forget the feelings I had after those tournaments. But it's just made me better. I know it for a fact. And deciding not to go to Canada or Latin was a hard decision for me, because I knew I probably should be playing events and getting those reps in. I did know at the time, though, I would have maybe three exemptions left, and I knew I would be a great Monday qualifier, and I ended up qualifying for three webs, and I had a sponsor exemption in one of them, and I knew that was probably a tough decision, and I knew many people wouldn't agree with me for it, and I didn't care. I mean, I didn't care what others thought about my decision. I knew that I would kind of make my own experiences, and I would make my own opportunities as I went, and I ended up having some success. I mean, I played in the U.S. Open again, which is another great experience. I won an APT event, All Pro Tour. I mean, I finished third in another one. I mean, I had some small moments of, okay, I know I'm on the right track, which gave me good feelings, but not playing, I probably didn't play in enough tournaments this year, even though I probably still played in 18 to 20 at least. You know, that decision was really hard, but I don't regret any of it.
Talk about golf, and I guess what you said, I agree with to a certain extent with the when you have near misses versus when everything's going good, like what you're learning
right
from near misses.
You learn way more when you don't get the things that you kind of desire for. I feel like if I had actually made the cut in all those, or barely squeaked in and played the weekend and whatever I did, I mean, I wouldn't have learned nearly as much as I did from just getting cut in the throat for those like five or six heartbreaks. I mean, the standard I set for myself is not just to make the cut. Let me get this clear, but yeah, not playing the weekend will, you know, is enough to not make you successful at all. So I just feel like, I mean, over and over again, I definitely felt, you know, some sort of heartbreak this year, but I mean, it's probably why I had success last week at second stage, you know, and why it's why I decided to go back to the same site and try to do it all over again. You know, I mean, those experiences I'll always look back to the rest of my career, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I think with life in general and golf in general, and when you miss, when you get, it's like a teaching moment, because then you get back, and especially with golf, like you're never in the same situation twice ever in golf. I think that's probably why, yeah, it's the coolest game in the world.
Right.
because you'll never hit the same shot ever again.
It'll be completely new another time. But the thing is, the things that you're feeling down this stretch are always the same. Mm-hmm. Everything, like, that's the great thing about golf is it's individual. So, I mean, you may not have the same physical things over and over again, but your mind and your body and what you're feeling will always be the same. And that's like the tangible thing that you can always get better at is how you control yourself out there. And I feel like I'm in some ways am a slow learner, and I've always been that way. Every single level I've kind of played at, it's taken me a little bit of time to feel like I'm ready to really go now, you know, and I feel like I've always been that way. And that's a great thing about golf is like, you just got to keep getting better at learning how to handle yourself in those moments.
What particular aspect do you think has been the toughest for you to learn like in the moment?
Honestly, it's just being able to control myself. And like, I am definitely more of a high strung competitive guy. And, you know, Coach Small, right when I got to school, he always talked about being able to like know what level you play at your best at. And everyone's different. Everyone, like, say you go a 1 to 10th scale on like emotion and just anxiety. I'm definitely a higher anxiety person. Like, I am always probably riding at an 8. And you got guys maybe like Brian Campbell, for example, he's probably riding at a 2. Like, there are guys that are just different in terms of like being able to have to get themselves up for something or get themselves down for something. And if you're always at a 5, then you're always probably lucky to be that way. But for me, I always need to calm myself down and you know, find the right level for myself, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that golf is so unique in the fact that, like, if you're playing in the NBA finals, everybody's amped.
Right.
But in golf, you have to play to your, like, personality.
Right.
And it's, you can't try and be somebody you aren't.
Right.
You can't look at Brian Campbell and be like, well, I just need to be like him.
No.
Because yeah. it would not work for you.
No, it wouldn't. And that's the crazy thing about it is you gotta know yourself. You gotta know, and that's your trial and error, you know, just like anything. But
and that's probably where when you have things not go your way is when you learn more about yourself than when things go your way.
For sure. I mean, when things are going well, anyone can go out there and find the right whatever, because things are just going well. You're not really like thinking about those things. But when you're driving home with a 7-hour drive, thinking about and festering in your mind about how you just misplayed 2 shots to miss the cut by 1 or 1 shot, you know, then that's when you're really learning. Like, you got plenty of time to think about things when you fail, you know?
It's those drives. A few years ago, I was playing a US Mid-Am qualifier, and I was playing well, and I finished double-double, and I was in the middle fairway of both the holes, and I missed qualifying by 1 or 2. And I was played in Indianapolis, yeah. And I'm driving home. And it was a 4-hour drive, and I don't remember anything from it because, you know, you're just replaying. And it's just amazing when you have tournament golf, the drive home from a tournament is like the craziest thing in the world, because like you've left the world, essentially.
And it's crazy because, I mean, you're just festering inside, but you're kind of driving and you're just kind of in the zone. Your body, your mind's just like driving for you, but you're just festering about the things that, you know, maybe have gone wrong. But on the other side of things, like when things go well, like I've driven home 3 times making the US Open for a 6-hour drive, and that's like best time of my life. One of those drives was with Charlie Danielson, and we were two of the only 4 to qualify at Springfield out of 80 guys. And we were driving home, and that was the best drive of our lives. I mean, like it's just, it can be, that's the great thing about golf though. You know, it's so high and low. And I mean, it's not like, you know, like you said, it's not like football or basketball where you can just make things better by trying harder. You know, it's the right temperament.
Yeah, a lot of times if you try less, things turn around.
Exactly. That's totally with golf, and especially with putting. You know, it's like it's just like you got to just let things happen, as you know, you just got to control what you can control only, you know.
That it's so true, because you get, especially if you're playing like a scramble, people are like, "Oh, you got to make this. Yeah, don't
right,
leave it.
Right.
And it's like, you never make that putt.
No.
You can't try and make it.
No.
Say you're over a big putt. Say it's a match play match and you need to make something. Like, your mm-hmm. mentality is the same for that putt as any other putt, right?
For sure. I mean, it just goes back to like relying on your routine, you know, and totally just only controlling on you know what you can control, and then that's not what's in front of you. Realistically, everyone reads the putt. Okay, I got the read, and everyone just obsesses with the read. But what I can control is right in front of my eyes right here, and this is me making a good stroke and hitting the golf ball as well as I can, and that's all I'm worried about when I hit a big putt is just. I know, okay, all I can control is what my eyes are looking at right at that dimple on the golf ball or whatever I'm looking at. And I can't control whatever else happens in front of me. I can predict what happens in front of me, but I can't control it.
Once you have your read, you shut off that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people just, you know, it's totally goes back to thinking too far in the future or too far in the past. I mean, it's what's in front of you. That read is the future. You know, what is in the now is making the best stroke you can, and whatever happens out in front of you happens.
So you played your third U.S. Open. You qualified. You made the cut at Chambers Bay. You played at Oakmont, and then you played this year at Pebble. The first two as an am. Did you feel any different playing in the U.S. Open as a pro?
Yeah, I mean, my feelings that week were so different because I honestly felt like I was. Like that was the week where I felt like, okay, I can compete against these guys. Like I really believed it.
And you got off to a great start.
Yeah. I mean, looking back at that week and yeah, I was really frustrated again and missing the cut by one. And it was another just kind of a heartbreaker. Looking back at that week though, that was huge because it was honestly the first week where I felt like I could beat every single one of these guys. Like I came in really confident. I was hitting the ball as good as I've ever hit the ball. And I just had two doubles on the first round that killed me. Like, and there were mistakes that I don't normally make either. Normally I take my own medicine and play patiently and all that. But I made a bad mistake on number 9 out of the fairway bunker. I hit a 5-iron trying to go for the green when I probably should have just hit a layup in that fairway and just took a 5. But even the layup into the 9 fairway is not easy because you got the ocean on your right and just horrible rough on the left. So I took everything into account and I went for the green and I hit it in the hazard to the right, just barely in the prairie grass in front of the ocean, and ended up hacking out and making a double. And then I hit a great iron shot into 10 that came up short and didn't get up and down. So I was back to even through 10 holes after being 3 under through 7. And I just made another double bogey coming in. And I'm looking at, I shot 3 over in the first round, I think, or 2 over. I can't remember, but yeah, I shot 2 over in the first round. And then I come back, and I play in the morning on the first round. And I play in the afternoon in the second round. And I'm in the last tee time, and I'm finishing almost at dark, and it was not easy. Like I played really solid in the second round, and I was on the cut line with 6 holes to go, and I missed a short putt on number 4, and I finished on 9, and I had a bunch of opportunities coming in for birdie the last 5 holes, and I didn't get one to go. And I remember though, like after all the heartbreaks I had prior to that U.S. Open and, you know, everything. I had 3 or 4 before that. I knew I was handling myself really well. Mm-hmm. And I came away with that U.S. Open thinking, well, I know I handled myself so well coming down the stretch in this one. It wasn't that I kind of hurt myself or cost myself by not handling myself the right way. And that was the most frustrating part of it, was I finally handled myself the right way, I felt like. And it just didn't happen my way. And walking away from that week was just just grueling because I knew I handled myself the right way finally, instead of the ways before where I didn't control myself down the stretch the way I should have.
Or you might have pushed too much when you
right know, you right know. Or I tried too, hard,
tried too
or,
hard
or yeah exactly I this time I knew I handled myself the right way. It just didn't go my way. I didn't get in for the weekend, and that was so frustrating because I played so well that week. And I remember I probably could have scored. I mean, the way I hit the ball and the way I played it, it could have been a really special first 2 days. It could have been, and everyone could say that, but I really believe I knew it. That's what's, you know, stunk was deep down. I knew I could be like in the top 10 after these first two rounds, the way I've hit the ball and the way I've played. And I remember, you know, I was just so motivated right after that. And I got on a plane to Tulsa, Oklahoma to play in an all pro tour event. And it's like, wow, you're going from the US Open to an all pro tour event. This is kind of crazy. This is reality. You know, I'm like, this is professional golf. I haven't done anything yet. I have not proven myself one bit. I've gone from the US Open to an all pro tour event. It's, you know, this is reality. And I actually went into that week and I shot 6 under the first round and 10 under the second round. And that was just all stemming from what I told myself. That was the one I won the week after the US Open. I remember that I was just telling myself the right things after the US Open. Like, okay, like you can't feel bad for yourself after that. I was telling myself, like, I knew I handled myself the right way and I know I'm close. And I remember that was just all from self-talk, and I knew I was really confident even after missing a cut.
That's the thing with golf. Your score is not always, doesn't always show.
Right. It doesn't indicate how you're playing sometimes. That's the frustrating part. And that's what happened to me at the US Open for sure. It just doesn't indicate. Like they always say, there's no pictures on the scorecard, but really in your mind, there's always pictures on the scorecard.
Yeah. Like you could go out and shoot 75 and be like, God, I played really, really good.
Yeah.
And then you could play the next day and shoot 72 and be like, I didn't play very good.
Exactly. There's no doubt about it. And everyone go around telling everyone how they played after the round or whatever. And there's people who are, everyone saying the same thing usually, like, oh, I played so good, but I just couldn't get the putts to drop. And it's the same story for a lot of people, but yet no one cares.
Yeah.
You just got to go out and get it done. And that's a great thing about professional golf is you got to keep proving it. This isn't the NBA where you can sign a 4-year, $120 million contract and you're set for 4 years. You got to keep proving it every single weekend, every single day. And that's a great thing about it. And it's just a total result oriented business.
Talk a little bit. You mentioned about the late tee time at Pebble. Obviously, as a sectional qualifier, you get kind of the dumpy tee times. As a sponsor exemption, you get dumpy.
And that's
tea
another
Monday.
Thing. That's another thing about it. The number one most popular question I've been asked when I say I played 3 US Opens: oh, who you've been paired with? Yeah. Like, they must be. I'm like, you have no idea their names.
I followed you for a little bit, and your playing partners weren't having their best days out there.
They're like, oh, you must be playing with some of the coolest like players. I'm like, you have no idea who they are. You know, I need to prove myself before I can get those nice tee times that everyone has, you know.
How much tougher is it playing in those tee times than, say, even college where you, or amateur stuff where you were, you know, nobody's ever going to say you get put in, they have like preferred pairings.
Right.
But in amateur events, you totally get preferred pairings if you're a bigger player.
Well, there are different experiences for me. Like at Oakmont, I had the best tee times, I thought. I had like the third tee time the first round in the perfect morning, you know, like perfect greens, everything. And then like the third tee time in the afternoon wave. So it was perfect. Like I wouldn't want better tee times than that. And then in Chambers in Oakmont, or in Chambers in Pebble, I had the same tee times. I had the last tee time of the morning wave in the first round, and then the last tee time in the afternoon wave of the second round. So, and that's the worst.
Think about the totem pole. So
it's the worst tee time.
Chambers, you're what were you, a freshman, right? Or a sophomore?
I was going to be a sophomore.
So they didn't really know who you were, right?
No.
And then you made the cut, and then the next year you get a prime amateur tee time. And then you're at the bottom of the rung of pros.
Oh, yeah.
So you go to the back.
Oh, yeah. No, it's hilarious, but it's fair. It's fair. But, I mean, I knew what I was going to get. I knew the tee times I was going to get going into it. But that's the thing. Like, those tee times suck. But, I mean, it's just the way it is. Like, you go into the first round. Okay, I got a morning tee time, but I'm like 9 o'clock or 9:30. And then I got so much time. You know, because then I'm like 3 o'clock the next day or 2 o'clock or whatever. And you're just like the waiting, you know.
Yeah. What is that day like?
I mean, it's just, okay, let's go work out. Let's eat breakfast. Let's go work out again. Let's, I mean, it's just like, I mean, I got tons of food waiting for me at the tent. I'm like, I don't know. I just, it's just eating and working out and stretching. That's what it is. And it's just like,
do you watch golf on TV?
I watch a little bit. Like to see how the course is reacting, but it's not going to react the same at 5 or 6 p.m. when I'm playing. So it doesn't do me any good anyway. But like, I mean, both Chambers and Pebble, I'm getting off the course and it's pitch black. You know, like it's cold at Pebble. It's, I mean, the ball's not going anywhere at 6 p.m. on the ocean. It's completely different. But, the greens are, you know, Pebble's greens were amazing and, you know, everyone says like they're not usually this good ever. And I'm like, well, I mean, it can't get any better than this. And then, you know, when you get to 6 p.m., 7 p.m. at night, they're totally beat up.
Did you play or do any practice round stuff that late? Did you think about trying to do that?
That would have been a smart idea, but I didn't know. I mean, honestly, having been my third US Open, I wanted to really just make sure I was fresh. And I remember my Chambers one. I'm like, oh, like first US Open, I'm going to play all the practice rounds I can. And I played with some cool players. I played with Brooks Koepka there. I played with Zach Johnson. I think Webb Simpson. I played with some really cool players in the practice rounds, but that was because I spent 72 holes preparing for the tournament. And then I made the cut. And I remember after that Sunday, I couldn't move. I mean, even as a freshman or sophomore, when I was young, but I was so beat up. Like, and then I learned the hard way with that, but like, I just kind of at Pebble, I'm playing nine every day, and I played with Charlie Danielson every day for 4 days straight. And I'm like, I'm just totally focused on having the most energy I can.
I think that's something that has changed, and especially professional golf in the last 5 years, is how much less practice round play happens especially at major championships. And I think that's something that's the common golf fan doesn't understand, is how much 72 holes of
competitive golf, and
especially national championship level golf, takes out of you.
No, it really, like, people don't see, like, you know, the physical toll any tournament will take on you, even if you have a caddy. But still, it is a physical toll. It really is.
The mental
wears on the physical for sure. But it's still, I mean, it's totally a factor, and people don't see that, but it really is.
Going from the US Open, the feeling of playing US Open versus Q School.
I mean Q School's more stressful for sure, but the first tee nerves, it doesn't compare. I mean, I had never been more nervous in my life, the first US Open first tee. But just on the every shot toll, I mean, the Q School, like the grind of it, it's more so the grind from, you know, hole one to hole 72 than it is for the US Open. You know, the US Open's like exhilarating because you got tons of people watching, even my group, you know, where I'm playing with Joe Schmoes next to me, who just made the US Open too. It's exhilarating because you got so many people out there, and I get all these IL chants and INI chants, and it fires you up. Like you have that extra support, and it feels great out there. Like, it's just exhilarating. But you know, the Q School grind is different. There's nobody out there. It's just you, really. I mean, I carried my bag at both stages this year. I'm like, it's just me out there with a bunch of guys who are trying to do it. It just doesn't compare.
Would you say that you've got like the heightened nerves of the US Open, but then you get into it and you're just...
Yeah. Once you get into it, it's like this, it's just, you know, some of the most fun times of your life on the course, just because there's so many people watching and it's the ultimate stage, you know, on the ultimate venues. And it's just, it's really just fun. That's what it is. And after the first tee or the first hole, it's like, okay, the nerves start to go away and it's just fun.
And then with Q School, it's more of like just a looming anxiety, kind of
the anxiety, like being able to having to control the anxiety the whole time is from 1 to 72. That's the part of it that's different, because at the US Open, even as a pro, like it's a good paycheck if you do well, but it's just exhilarating. Like even in my third one, honestly, it's just the most fun times of your life, and it will be that way in, you know, into my 15th one, hopefully.
Yeah. That'd be good. 15 US Opens. Yeah. hopefully more than that.
Yeah.
What was the biggest shock turning pro? Like, what was one thing that surprised you when you turned pro that you didn't expect?
It's hard to say because, I mean, honestly, I was lucky because I was so well prepared for it, being in Illinois and, you know, being around all those guys that went pro at Illinois before me and having those relationships with those guys. I mean, I wouldn't say I was like, you know, surprised with one thing, honestly. I just, nothing equals to the excitement you get when you walk on the range with all those guys that you've been watching for your whole life. And I mean, you can't mimic that. You can always draw up in your mind how things will go and like be ready for that just because you've been wanting it your whole life. But nothing mimics when you walk up on the range and there's Tiger Woods, you know, or not you, even other guys. It's just, it's cool.
I feel that way, and I'm just a media member when Tiger's on the range.
Yeah, it's just that's not something that you can be ready for, honestly.
Mm-hmm. You played tons of match play as an AM, whether it be through USGA stuff, the Western, other AM events, mm-hmm. College. Is there a match that you think about the most?
Yeah. I mean, my sophomore year, we should have won it at Oregon. I know it's like, oh, anybody can say we should have won, but we really should have won that year. It was like, I'm not a dweller of the past at all. Like, I move on from things fine, and I'm, you know, I'm better for it, but I'm really, yeah, it stings that we never won a national championship when I was there. And our team, my sophomore year, I mean, I've got a poster of my room behind me, and it's like how many times we won. We won like 10 of our 13 events that year, 9 of our 13 events that year. And then going in, nothing will beat the vibe of that team that we had. Like we were so close knit, you know. It was me, Charlie, Thomas, Dylan, and Eduardo Liparelli, and then Alex Burge played a lot too. And nothing will beat the vibe of our team that year. I mean, we were so close knit. We were so good. I mean, we had Coach Small too, you know, and that's pretty fun. But I mean, going into Oregon, we were no doubt in our minds, we were the best team, and we finished second in match play after not having our best stroke play. And I remember we were like eighth going into the final round of stroke play, but that never felt like, oh crap to us. We never felt like, oh, we're going to miss match play. We just kind of played a really solid final round, and we ended up being one stroke out of Texas for winning stroke play. And we were the 2 seed, and we played South Carolina. And I remember the great thing about the South Carolina match was that they put up Matt Neesmith against, or coach put up Eduardo against Matt Neesmith, and or one of the other way around or something. And coach, it was perfect because coach was able to, like, Eduardo was a freshman at the time, and coach was able to like get Eduardo ready for this match because he's like they're talking about how you're the sacrificial lamb, Eduardo. Like they've already marked off a win for your match. And it was great. No better feeling when Eduardo beat him on the 18th hole. And we ended up taking care of business against them. But that was such a fun feeling because Eduardo like felt, you know, so great. He should have. And he beat their best player. And Matt's now gone on the PGA Tour. But that was such a great feeling. And then it's just one drawback that I have about the NCAA match play is that you have to play 2 matches in one day. And that always bit us in the butt, honestly. Like we made final final four 3 years in a row, and we ended up losing in the final four 3 years in a row. And I mean, you can't make excuses looking back. I mean, I don't make excuses, but that's one thing that I wish was different, is that you spread out the matches one each day.
You know, they'd make more money that way too.
Yeah. And I mean, it just makes complete more sense that way too, because I mean, we talk about the physical and mental grind of the U.S. Open. Nothing compares to the NCAA Championship week.
Is it added because you've got your team?
Yeah, you got your team, and it's emotional. But you got, on the Thursday where the week starts, a practice round, you've got a 7.5 hour practice round.
Yeah.
So you show up to the NCAAs and you got on Wednesday or Tuesday and you got a practice round, you get one practice round on Thursday, and it is the slowest round of golf on your, in your whole life. It is 7.5 hours and you got to study each hole. You got to be, you know, coach is just going crazy. It's a, you know, huge day. You got to learn every hole. You got a
Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a hectic day. And then, you know, you eat breakfast, obviously, like 9, go out of the course at 10. You're on the course till 5 for sure, at least. And then, you know, you got to get a quick dinner in. You got, you know, the first round the next day. And you got 4 rounds of stroke play. You have a cut after the third round. That's, you know, no joke. Top 15 out of 30. And then you got another cut. And then you got match play. And you got that first day of match play is 2 matches. So think about already the toll you've taken. You know, you already played 4 rounds. You already played a slow practice round. You got a team that's obviously emotional, wanting to win. Obviously, everyone wants to win. But that you get to play your match, you win, and you have to go right back out. And that's just, it's just a grind. It doesn't make sense to me. And we never accomplished anything that day, which, I mean, obviously is an excuse, but that just doesn't make sense to me. I mean,
you get to there, and it's the other thing about match play is it's just, you see it every year with last year they were talking about how Lucas Bjerregaard beating Tiger Woods was like the upset. It's like, I mean, we're talking about the 40th ranked player. It's like Eduardo beating Matt Neeson. It's like that's going to happen 4 times out of 10.
I hate to toot my own horn, but when he lost to Lucas Bjerregaard, I'm like, he's going to win the Masters. Like that's, I mean, Tiger, you know, that festered with Tiger for that whole week and a half before the Masters. You know that. And I'm like he just missed a 4-footer. Like, that's not what Tiger is.
I couldn't believe he missed that putt.
Me too. This guy. You saw how good he looked in Austin that week. He hit the ball amazing. Like, and he played really well against Bjerregaard too. He just made a couple of dumb mistakes that Tiger doesn't make normally, and that was quite something. And then when everyone's talking about some random beat Tiger, I'm like, first of all, he's not random. He's probably won before many times. He's
in the WGC match play.
Right. And yeah, it's like, it's golf.
It drives me nuts every year. It's like every year one of the big players goes down to some guy that's like 50th to 60th. And it's like, this is not an upset. Like, no. This is statistically going to happen.
It's probably, guy will probably beat the top seed 46% of the time.
Exactly. Like the and that's another great thing. What we've talked a lot is the margin in golf is so minuscule.
Right. And that's crazy. When you just compare it to, it's like sister sport in tennis, it never happens in tennis. You never you rarely see a 50 seed beat a 3 seed even. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah. It's really true. I think there's something because tennis is played, a match in tennis in a weird way is like a 5-game series in NBA versus like a set is like a game, versus a round in golf is like a set.
It's a sprint. Yeah.
Talk about US Open local versus US Open sectional. I always think about this with qualifiers, like 18 hole versus 36 hole qualifiers mindset.
It's big. Yeah,
or Monday.
It's massive. I mean, obviously, I would much rather prefer a 36-hole match, you know, a 36-hole qualifier. Like, I mean, you can play not as, like, aggressively. You can it definitely will get a better player 10 times out of 10 than in just an 18-hole match. But I understand the logistics of an 18-hole match or 18-hole round already takes 5.5 hours, you know, so you don't have the time usually. But it is definitely a big difference. Like in a Monday qualifier, you gotta, you know, get out and get off to a good start no matter what, or you're going home. And then in a 36 hole US Open qualifier, you can play more patiently, you can serve more energy, you can just play to your strengths more, and it will get the better player for sure.
We're both from Illinois. We're not a professional golf hotbed,
yeah,
per se. We got a lot, there are a lot of guys in your age group that are doing stuff, but I don't know if a lot of people know this. So state junior match play is called the Chick Evans here.
Yeah.
You're 13 and you and Doug Gim
playing all high schoolers make the finals as eighth graders.
Yeah.
Do you ever think back to how crazy that, I mean, you guys played your first match against each other since then at the Eastlake Cup a few years ago. But like, talk about that. And did you know Doug well before that?
Yeah. So Doug, I started playing IJG events when I was 9 and 10 years old. I honestly won a lot of them. I didn't have like much competition at all. Like, honestly, I mean, I'm not trying to be cocky, but that's what it was. And then 11 years old comes around and, you know, you got this new kid who's paired with me in the first term of the year and his name's Doug Gim. And I'm like, oh, okay. This is a new player, obviously. And I was, you know, a little surprised that he was paired with me. Cause honestly, the IJJ used to always pair with me with the same guys that were like supposed to be pretty good. And he was really good. Like, he was really good. I don't think he played too well in the first event because, like, I know he and his dad say that his dad didn't let him play in events until, I don't know if he was able to hit range balls really well or I don't know. But I know Doug said he wasn't allowed to play in events until his dad let him. And finally he did. And I think I squeaked it out in the first event that we played with each other in. I think it was at Glenview Park. But after that, I mean, Doug and I played a lot against each other, 11, 12, and 13. And then when we were 13, we did the Chick Evans, obviously. And I think Doug won the stroke play. And I was like third in this or fourth in the stroke play. And I think I was like the sixth seed and he was the one seed. And we ended up both seeing each other in the finals, which was pretty cool. And that was really cool. And I still remember the match and I'm still kind of beat up about it. Because I was one up through 14, and on 15, I think I three putted to lose a hole, and then we tied 16. And then on 17, Doug made a birdie to go one up. And then on 18, I hit this drive. I don't know if anyone knows the 18th hole steeplechase, but it's like a dog leg left par five. Then the second shot, if you go for it, it's over water. But of course, I was like 4'6" at the time, and Doug was, you know, probably taller than me. But I hit my drive right on like the side hill, and I had this baseball swing lie, and I just completely missed it. I tried to lay up with like a 6-iron. I towed the crap out of it, and I ended up under these trees, the small trees on the left side. Like, I remember I had like 190 yards out of the rough, and Doug had laid up to like 100 yards. And I needed to make a birdie. And I mean, to this day, this was probably one of my best shots I've ever hit in my life. But I was under a tree, 190 yards out of the rough. And I was 13 years old and I had a 5-wood in hand. And I hit the best 5-wood of my life. I mean, I had to like shorten my swing to make sure I don't hit these tree branches. And I just hit this punch. I hit it right in the center of the face. And it was one of those knucklers that came out hot, no spin. But I landed this thing just over the water, probably in the rough, maybe in the fringe, and it lands really soft and kicks up to like 3 feet. And I was just like, that's the best shot I've ever hit. And I remember my dad walking up to the left, just like screaming, like my dad was crazy, probably just going nuts. And Doug's dad was either caddying for him or standing there. And Doug ended up hitting this good wedge to like 12 feet. He's got like a curler, like a 3-foot slider down the hill, and he makes it. Like a 12-foot, 3-foot break slider. And I was just like, damn, like that was quite a match. Like, I ended up, you know, losing one down and they put up 2 down on the board. I'm like, I lost 1 down. But I mean, it was just, I was like, yeah, this kid's for real, you know?
You were a little kid.
But like when I let me say this. When I saw Doug make that putt last, a couple months ago to make his card, I'm like, I've seen that like 8 times already. It didn't surprise me one bit when it went in.
That was honestly one of the coolest moments of the whole golf here.
Yeah,
was
for
that
sure.
Putt.
For sure.
Like,
I mean,
it
was a heck of an up and down. I mean, we played 2 Big 10s at Victoria and, that's no easy up and down. You got water right behind you. And it was like a 20-yard bunker shot. And he had like a ball below his feet. And, you know, he played a great like side spinner, you know, coming in from the left that, you know, chucked up to about, what, it was 7 feet and drilled it, you know.
It kind of like encapsulates pro golf like right there. It's like this great player. He was way inside the line.
Uh-huh.
A bad shot here and a bad shot there. And all of a sudden he's on the line. And then he's got to crazy. He's got to get really not an easy up and down to get his card. And it's like, are you going to do it or are you not going to do it?
Yeah, no, that's the great beauty of professional golf. Honestly, it's just there's no better way of being competitive, I guess. And the feelings you get being able to control it, learn how to control it. It's the best.
You were a smaller kid growing up, and then you hit this growth spurt, and I imagine your game changed completely.
Totally. I mean, I didn't probably break 6 feet until senior year of high school. Like I was in my freshman year of high school. I remember I weighed 120 pounds and I was like 5'3". And then by my junior year, I finally was growing and I was probably 5'10". But I mean, I was such a different player. I was like Dylan Meyer. I was basically like Dylan Meyer. I had a hell of a short game and I hit these hybrids and woods to, 3 feet all the time. And then my game changed, obviously a lot. And once I grew, I started hitting it further and my short game got kind of messed up. Like I didn't have the same like technique. My technique changed because I grew, I think. And,
do you think it's also because you were hitting, you needed it less?
Probably. And I was just always such a talented ball striker. I always knew kind of how to hit greens. I haven't always had the best swing. I've always had, I've always been a little steep. I've always had, not the best fundamentals, but I've always been able to know how to feel it around. And that's, that's the credit. Obviously I've had the same swing coach, Brett Packey, since I was 10 years old, and we've been together ever since. And that's the great thing about it is Brett and I have such a great dialogue. And even through my growth spurt, through everything, we've been able to, do a really good job, I think. And he's done a great job with me. But my golf swing changed so much. My short game changed. And obviously not having to rely on it much probably changed it. But by the time I got to school freshman year, coach wanted to change all this stuff about Coach Small. Wanted to change a lot of stuff about my short game. And I played well my senior year of high school. I going into freshman year of college, I made the final four of the Western Am. I made another US Am. I had been playing really well. In my freshman year of college, I had a good year, but I was just totally overwhelmed with my short game. I mean, I was obviously not having the best short game my senior year of high school, but I still like didn't overthink it. I just kind of went around there and just got the job done. And then, I needed a better fundamental short game, but I needed to change things, obviously. But I was just totally overwhelmed when I started working with Coach Small on it. I ended up getting pretty damn good at it. And right now, my short game has never been better. And it's why I played really well last week. And I leaned on it a lot last week. But
I feel like when you're a kid, it's not fun to practice short game.
No.
But then, like, all of a sudden, it becomes the most fun thing to practice.
Exactly. No doubt about it. I mean, you kind of just don't care when you're a kid. You kind of just do it and find a way to be good at it. You don't really think about the technique of it. But in order to have all the shots, you need to have good technique. And that's kind of what I learned for a couple of years there at Illinois. I mean, Coach Small did a great job teaching me how to do it. I was pretty overwhelmed for a few years there.
I actually think that the best feeling in golf is when you have an incredibly difficult, the shot where you know you have to hit it right into a certain spot for it to just kind of trundle over a hill, like on a pitch. And when you hit nip it,
definitely
just perfect.
On tight lies too. Like no better feeling. And I was never good at those, but like now I feel like I could go anywhere and chip. Honestly, I was never good at the tight lie, like square face, but got to keep it up a little bit shots. And that's what I've improved on a lot. I mean, I've always been pretty good at just, the awkward ones, flop ones, the bumps, the flops, all those, but the square face off tight lies, off a downhill lie, when you get good at those, it's a powerful feeling,
Yeah. It's like the most fun when you hit those right. Cause then the ball just reacts. It's just like, how it's going to react.
No doubt.
Yeah. It's cool. I short game, something that I used to hate and wasn't very good at.
Right.
And then I don't play that much and I don't practice at all, but like short games where I have the most fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It's fun to practice. I mean, I learned that at school too. Coach Small short game is amazing. And, a lot of my teammates were too, like Dietrich and Charlie's. Their short games were unreal.
Yeah. So what's the thing you miss most about college amateur golf?
College, for sure, miss my teammates and practicing with them day to day. Amateur golf, I mean, the summer events, the slate of the summer events are so good. You know, like, you can name every one of them. Every one of them is run amazingly by great people, and I played in most of them, and, you know, those were a lot of fun for sure.
What's the thing you least miss about it?
You know, I almost said slow golf, but it just gets slower. I honestly, I like the flexibility of creating my own schedule now, like with like the, how I want to do things every day to day. So I wouldn't say I least miss the structure part of it, but I definitely like being able to be flexible.
Yeah. I think the structure.
Oh, definitely probably. Class though. Not having class in there is huge. I mean,
not having those walks across the quad in December in Champaign.
Yeah, it's like that's I don't miss for sure.
I one year I had this. I had like the last final, and I lived in the six pack as a freshman.
Yeah, it was so
the
did I. So
last
did I.
Final and the buses weren't running. It was like the last day. It was so late, and it was like the coldest day of the year. And I was walking back, and I just had a horrible final. I knew I bombed it.
Yeah.
And I was walking, and it was windy, and I almost just gave up. I almost just laid down and said, you know what?
I know that feeling. I'm done. I know that feeling.
So last two questions here. We'll get out on two fun ones. So what's the best shot you've ever hit? The best shot that you think about?
Oh, that's hard. I don't really have one that I think about from time to time. I probably should. Honestly, I don't have one. But the one I just mentioned against Doug, I obviously remember well. Yeah. So I'll leave it on that one.
Okay. What's the worst shot you've ever hit?
Oh. Well, I hit a pretty bad one a couple weeks ago at Illinois fundraiser. I coach had me get up in front of about 200 people who were there, and it was cold morning and I hadn't quite warmed up yet. And he told me to get out the driver because he, you know, and I'm like, okay.
At least it was big.
Yeah. So at least I could tee it up too. Right. And then, I tee this thing up and I just hit like a 30 yard duck hook, like straight in the ground. And I'm just like, I just went straight and teed up another one. And this one went like 90 yard duck hook. And then I teed up another one, and finally I hit it one way down there. And I was like, all right, I warmed up, you know. But, man, I mean, I wasn't embarrassed, but I'm just like, all right, like, this is pretty dumb to hit a shot when you're not even warmed up yet.
It's funny. The worst shots, like, they're almost so shocking that, like, you're not like, you're just like, wow, that was really weird.
Yeah, you just got to laugh them off, you know.
It's a short memory. So good luck in final stage. Hopefully you got a bunch more fans to go with all the Illini faithful here.
Thank you, Andy.
And we'll be looking for you in next year on the Corn Ferry Tour.
Yes, sir.